The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Good afternoon. Oh, man, that song is so amazing. So let me say hello to a few friends. Well, welcome to Life's a Gamble, your host, Melvin Prince Jonathan. So when you call up, I'm going to ask you two questions. One, are you rolling or are you passing the dice? Okay. Now, today I'm rolling the dice. Every day I'm pretty much rolling the dice. So I'm probably never passing them because I think that there's an opportunity for me to do as best I can do on this day. So, look, we got a great show set for you guys today. I'm not a guy to have a bunch of guests or hosts and stuff to come on unless it's relevant to the listening audience. So, but I want to tell you a story, but I want to say hello to a few folks. Let me say hello to Barry Sable and friends. And you can catch him on Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1210. He's a good friend of mine. Also, Steve DeVario, can also catch him on his show. He's Conservative Talk. Of course, you guys know that this is an African-American Republican show. We do it for 1 hour, but in September, we may extend that time schedule. So by the time you've done listening to this show, what party I'm a part of wouldn't matter. The fact that I can help you should matter. The fact that you can get something out of me that you can't get anywhere else should matter. The fact that I don't come on here telling you my resume is extensive and it's great. But I care more about using that resume to help you get out of the problems that you have, the everyday problems, the struggles, the situations. Now, I do have an issue with single moms raising these young men in the city of Philadelphia. If they don't have fathers, get them uncles. If they don't have uncles, find yourself an older man to help you raise these children. And I'm going to just share something with you. So usually when I take my son to get his hair braided, it's in a rough part of the city. I usually drop him off and I usually go sit in my lounge or I go sit somewhere, get a bite to eat because it takes about a couple hours, maybe 2 hours and a half, somewhere around there. And I don't want to go far because I got to come all the way back to pick him up. But this particular day, I chose to just sit on the block and observe the block. And it's in the area of Erie Avenue, south of Erie. And so as I'm sitting there, I'm a good 2 hours in, you know, not off in my car, get back on point with my reading and just take a moment in time. And so I feel a movement in my car as if someone just hit my car, okay? And so the truck that was parked behind me, exhaust, got all kind of holes in it so you can hear it a block away. Now, I'm observing the driver of this truck, which is this grown man but young kid at the same time. And I'm watching him, you know, he's doing the AutoZone thing. You know, he's changing brakes and calibers and, you know, smoking a cigarette, maybe some weed or something like that, you know. And I'm looking at him, and I'm admiring his work. His handyman work to fix this truck. And so when I feel the jolt in my car, I go up, I get out my car. He's already done driven up the street and backed in and parked. I get out my car. I go to the rear of my car to identify that it had just been hit. It had to have been hit. You know, it moved me. So I know, you know, something had happened. And so now, once again, I'm usually in North Philly and I'm out of North Philly. You know what I mean? You know, and so now I got a black streak going across my blue car, one of the best cars I had. Walk across the street, look at the young man, he's dressed in all black. He's standing 10 toes down for his block. I guess he controls the block. I say, so as I walk over, he says, so what you want, old head? I say, well, your man just hit my car. He said, no, my man ain't hit your car. I say, so where he at? And I walk around, you know, urban colloquialism, so where he at? Walk around the other side of the car. And now the driver of the truck, young kid, just all rah-rah and stuff like that. Oh, head, you know, I got a black bumper. If I had a hit your car, it had blue on it. I said, first of all, black's a dominant color. It probably won't collect that blue. But with that being said, you did hit the car. Now, all I needed him to do was acknowledge that he hit the car, my bad. But he went into this whole collection of self, you know what I mean? I don't know who he know. I don't know who he tied into. But he was like, oh, head, you just need to go ahead. Go ahead, old head. I say, that's the way you want to lead us? He said, no. He said, look, man, I ain't hit your car. So you need to go ahead, old head. And I took a deep breath. And it took everything in me to say, fine. Goes back to my car. And like I've been known to do in this city right here, I make a phone call. And after I said, do you know these guys on this block right here? He said, what do you mean, the black guys? I said, yes. He said, no, not really. I said, well, one of them hit my car, and I think I'm having a little problem. He said, I'll be right there. Anybody know me in Philadelphia, I always get that I'll be right there, because I'm right there for other people. So 7 minutes later, three Mercedes drive up the street. And a young boy done stepped in something that he had no idea that he done stepped in. And the young people out here, and I feel sorry for them, because I know why they in the grave early or in the hospital. So then the cars pull up. I got a son, if not his age, a little older than his age. He say, Dad, what's up? I say, see this one right here? He hit my car, right? And then he went into this little rah-rah moment right here. But you see the boy in the black right here? This is his neighborhood. He should have told him to not be disrespectful. Because when my son got out the car, he went straight to the boy in the black. It's the one I went to. He had the appearance that he controlled the block. And so he said, you hit my son's car? He said, you hit my dad's car? He said, my dad? He said, and then the young boy was like, yeah, well, I went and talked to him. And what had happened was one of the young ladies in the neighborhood said, sir, can I talk with you? I said, absolutely. She said, never mind him. I said, I'm not minding him. I said, here's the damage to my car. I said, you came over to talk to me. You need to go talk to him. Because all I need him to do is come down here and acknowledge that he hit this car. I can get it buffed out. You know what I mean? It's not a real fender bender. I can take care of it. But to acknowledge that he didn't hit it and to be disrespectful, you know. And then she goes up there and she talks to the young boy. Young boy came down. It's like, yo, well, I ain't really hit your car, man. But if I disrespected you, I said, you know you disrespected me. I said, but you know, young boy, in this day and age, you ain't going to get no wins out here doing that. He's like, yeah, well, you know, it's whatever. But, you know, I had to come down here. The girl asked me to come down. I said, all right, that's righteous. Then when my sons pull up, I said to the guy in the black, I said, it's your fault. But this is the guy that hit my car. And the boy said, well, you know, yeah, well, I told you, I went down there and talked to him. You know, I went down there and talked to him. So he keep that energy up. And then right away, a Philadelphia special, that three-piece, you know, that left hand, if you ever boxed before, you're going to crack him with the right hook. You're going to come with a straight right hand, and then you're going to hit him with that left hook on that uppercut on the way down. So my son three-piece this kid and drops him immediately. And then everybody coming out the house talking about, no, don't do this, don't do that. No, he bought that. He bought that. And so then he, you know, they pick him up off the ground, you know what I mean, you know, swell up, come to his senses, get in his truck, then circle the block, driving 100 miles an hour, and came back. And then he went and called somebody. He went and called somebody, which you should do. If somebody smashed you, you're supposed to call the troops. He called somebody. And so everybody's still waiting on that little small block in North Philly. And the people he called in the two trucks got out the trucks. And they said, wait a minute. You did what? He said, this the monster we call when we got problems. He said, no, well, he older than me and I'm only 20. Now, mind you, he never said how old he was when he was running off with the mouth, when he was smoking weed, when he was rah-rah, when he was carrying on. Now, all of a sudden, he only 20. And the boy said, you need to apologize to him and you need to apologize to his father. He said, you lucky because this boy could have, he could have. He said, he the one we call. And so y'all raising these sad, small in stature, faster, be disrespectful kids out here. And now I see why y'all got all these balloons in the air. I see what happened to these young kids. And the boy in the black, he it would have took nothing for him to disappear. I said, you're going to control your block. You Islamic, you Muslim. You want to control this block right here. And you don't tell your people how to behave, like how to recognize. I said, you're going to go sit on your step and then somebody's going to walk up and they're going to end your life because you're a fool. You let these people act the way they act in your neighborhood. They have no respect for older people now. I don't know where that came from and I don't know how older people need to get that back. I think the politicians had a lot to do with it. The lack of interaction in those urban neighborhoods, the fact that y'all got all kind of people in these depressed neighborhoods, rebuilding, while y'all letting these young men sit on the sidelines. You know they're not capable of driving a backhoe. You know they're not capable of driving a front-end loader. You think that you are impressed by somebody speaking these $50 words to you while they're still in your community. Once they start doing the infrastructure, they're going to start taking the homes. Once they dig in the streets, trolley tracks for like 100 years and they all of a sudden got a plan for the trolley tracks to be taken up and for asphalt to go down, they got a plan to take your neighborhood. And I'm not even saying your neighborhood. I'm saying the mere fact that if you're a homeowner, the mere fact that if you are residing in a neighborhood, you're renting in a neighborhood that is pretty much anything goes in that neighborhood, like Erie Avenue. And now they're building the infrastructure on both sides, on Erie Avenue and on Germantown Avenue. They're redoing the roads. Soon they're going to be redoing the neighborhood. I'm going to take my first break, and I'll talk to you on the other side.
Hi, I'm Cody DiPablo. Cancer, we don't want to think about it, but I had to because, well, I was busy working, traveling, enjoying life. Completely forgot to pay attention to my health. Too much time passed since my last PAP. By the time I was tested, things didn't look too good. We thought I might have cervical cancer. Cervical, ovarian, and uterine cancers are gynecologic cancers. I was lucky. After lots of worries, no cancer. I've always been very close to my mother. When we finally got good results, she broke down. And that's when I realized it's not just about me. It's about your loved ones, too. So women, get a Pap test to check for cervical cancer and get the inside knowledge about gynecologic cancers.
A message from the Inside Knowledge Campaign and the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. For more information, call 1-800-CDC-INFO.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Know when to run.
You never count
your money while sitting at the table. So I told y'all that story, and I tell it to you because I don't know if a life was saved yesterday. Because when the kid made a phone call, under normal circumstances, it probably would have been whatever. But the fact that he made that call almost got him. Because when his brother came, guess what? The person was going after him a second time. And his brother couldn't do nothing about it. So anyway, and as I try to tell folks, I say, so when you make enough money, you know, then you move on. You leave this situation, this systemic poverty, to somebody else, because your fight is already being challenged by the politicians that's in the back room selling you out. The ones that's negotiating who does the contract, construction contract in your neighborhood, the ones they sit at these events, on these fundraisers, and set themselves up. And so you got to stop being, I'm angry. I'm not going to call you names. I'm not going to call the Democratic people stupid. I'm not going to call them dysfunctional. I'm not going to call them any names. But you were patsies. You were sitting idle. They can give you anybody. They gave you Biden. They're giving you Harris. They can give you anybody. All they want you to do is get Harris' name right. Get her first name right. You know, if she was good to you, you would know her name. Period. Every day. I'm not the only one looking at the news. I'm not the only one seeing people that are dying in this city right here. Do you know they refuse, all of the stations refuse to report folks dying in the city? If you looked at your news this morning, they didn't report one murder. They reported something in New Jersey. They didn't report one murder that happened in the city today. That's why you need to get your, where's the African-Americans that had their own paper? You know, where are the reporters at? Where are the ones out there on the ground? Where are the beat writers at? Why y'all so scared and passive, going and accepting anything? On a whole nother radio show, letting them have their way, and y'all not saying anything. Cowards, just basically cowards. So look, I have a phone call, one of my friends, George, how are you today?
I'm fine, Prince. How are you today?
I was telling him a story yesterday, man, you know, where the young boy hit my car and he drove up the street and I go get out my car and I go talk to the other young man. I said, you know, he's standing 10 toes deep. This is his hood. I get that. I respect that. I say, so you're mad? He said, young boy, he ain't hit your car. What you mean he hit my car? I'm trying to tell you he hit my car. I was in my car. He's like, no, he ain't hit your car. And I walk around and I go talk to the kid. George, I go talk to him like, my man, you hit my car. Come take a look at it. You know what I mean? Oh, no, I ain't hit it. You know, this black bumper right here, they don't got no blue on it. Ah, he just carrying on. And I'm watching him change the brakes and caliber on the car. I'm giving him props because I'm sitting in the car. You know what he said, George?
What did he say?
He said, all right, oh, hey, get away. He said, go ahead, go away, go. Oh, hey, you better go ahead and walk away. I said, you sure you want me to do that? He said, yeah, you better go ahead and walk. You know, I said, George, I got in the car, George. The young lady came down and was like, mister, could you not pay him no mind? I said, look, you see my car? He hit my car. You see it, right? She said, yeah. I said, but you know, he ain't gonna win being that kind of disrespectful. She go talk to him. He walked back down the street. I already made a phone call. He done walked back down the street. Got out the car. He said, yeah, O-Head, I see it. But O-Head, you know, I'm, you know, look, O-Head, I'm gonna just tell you like this. I don't think I hit your car. You know what I mean? But you think I do it. Let me apologize. I said, the black markings show that you did it. And so he walked away. And 5 minutes later, 3 Mercedes come pulling up, right? My son get out the car with his squad. I'm like, here you go right here. I say, this one right here is standing 10 toes down. It's a problem because he walked up to the guy in the black like I walked up to the guy in the black because he's like, he got the block. And so the boy came around there. And so my son saying, yo, you hit my dad's car. You disrespecting my dad. He was like, no, I went down there and I told your dad. You know what I mean? You know, if I hit it, then, you know, my bad. You know what I mean? Dad, keep that energy up. Next thing you know, my son gave him a foot of a special. That left hook, right, straight, right. Another left hook, bucket him, set him down, right? And everybody hollering, want to know what's going on. No, don't do that. Don't do that. No, he earned that. He gets up, you know, picks him up, gets in his truck, drives around the corner. You know, pick the girl up, get his money for the brakes, go back around the corner, make a phone call, call his brother up. His brother come with 2 trucks around there. You know what his brother did when he came around there?
Mm.
He seen my son. He said, are you kidding me? He said, we call him when we got problems. My son said, you wouldn't call somebody? My son was ready to go back and beat him up right there. And he said, on the strength of your brother. You know what this young boy said? I'm 20 years old. Oh, now it matters how old you are. You was just husky, smoking weed. You know what I mean? You doing break jobs. You cussing. You carrying on and stuff like that. I say, young boy, you ain't got to extend your hand. You ain't got to extend your hand to apologize to me. I don't need that. I just want to show you something. It ain't really your fault. You about to die today, but it ain't your fault. It's the man in black right here fault. Because you acting like you hugging the block and you letting them get away with being disrespectful and stuff like that. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, somewhat, if I had to come around here, you would be the one. He'll get a pass. Plus, he called his brother co-signing, but you'll get a one. Now, you go call somebody right now because you'll be the one. He was like, well, no. I said, no. And then he went back and sat on his step like a little baby. Like, y'all raising these little young boys. They small in stature and they running off with the mouth. And yet I see why you going to funerals every week. I see why you can't protect your youngins and stuff like that. Every night, they getting gunned down in the city right here because y'all preparing these young kids, y'all preparing them all wrong. All wrong. Especially when you call somebody.
You gotta always think in the terms of, are they worth renting space in your head? You know what you're dealing with. You're dealing with not all, I'd say about maybe 80% of them, they are low mentality type people. You know, you got to look at how their household is around their household, how their mom or how their dad is or how their mom and dad is. If, you know, they're used to keeping a nasty house, then it carries on. If women see their dad or their mom's boyfriend always beating them up, they think that's the thing to do. Like a lot of young girls would say, that's a sign of endearment. A lot of guys, and I try not to put kids in grown folks' business. That's just something I do. If I can't deal with the situation, some things you just eat. You know, with this day and time, because, you know, you're going to have to, like, really go and do something that's going to really hold
up. Yeah, exactly. And so when you got something to lose, you're in a position to lose,
they're not even worth the conversation.
Right, you're put in a position.
I mean, I understand the part of respect and disrespect. You know, but when people never taught respect or seen how respect is go up through the chain of command, then what do you expect? You know, I mean, I know but pretty
you,
much
you
everybody.
Able to make, now, listen, you able to make a phone call. I'm able to make a phone call. Other people able to make a phone call. But by the time another person who don't want no drama, who might live in that neighborhood, by the time they get to make a phone call, you got one of these young thugs or wannabe thugs, gangsters, because they smoke weed and the mom let them walk around with their shirt off in the house attacking somebody, trying to get their Grand Theft Auto credit off attacking somebody, you know, and that has to stop in the city right here. You know, it just has to stop. I don't know how it's going to stop. I know a 60-year-old man just died the other day because he had a conflict in West Philly with a young kid, but it has to stop. I don't know the solution to it, but I know you ain't called for that. I'm just giving you something else. Give me what you called for, because I know you want to talk to me about something.
It's two major things in this city that's going to, like, really come to a screeching halt. One, Bethel's had a good free ride, you know, keep telling people about the stats, the data, this, but the data's no more than what he make it be.
Right.
And if you look at it, they keep saying that nationally the crime, you know, the crime is going down, this, that, and the other. No, nationally, you put it in a computer to make it look like it's going down, but in every major city, you still got a what? Like minimum about maybe 10, 12 killings a week.
Ooh.
I mean, that's not... You know,
that's not a decrease in crime, right?
That's not acceptable. So when you take your best police officers and you start putting them, say, let's use Philadelphia for example.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you take your best officers and start putting them in foolishness, like the boathouse, you know, stuff like that, recreation, instead of major crimes of guns or violence or drugs. And drugs, there's no money in drugs. You know, it's money in it, but most people now want to get away from drugs because most people are using fentanyl, and fentanyl will kill you.
Exactly.
It stands in butts.
There's no
All it's got to do is get on your, just touch it or get on your system, you're dead, period. So when you hear a person talking about open drug trafficking,
right.
You know, earmark, believe me, get away from them because they don't know what they're talking about. They're still 10 years behind time and they're lying.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you a question. Do you got time to hold on for me for a minute? Let me take Clyde. And I got a, I got another person coming on, but after that next person come on, I want your feedback. So I don't want you to go anywhere. Can you hold for a minute? Let me take Clyde.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on for a minute. Clyde.
Yes, sir. How are you?
Man, I was pissed off yesterday, man. I was pissed off because I think the young boy could have, he just bit off more than he could chew. You know what I mean? And so I just would like all of the parents who got these young kids, man, to find a way, you know. You good? Sound like you?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Find a way to if you don't have a father, if you don't have an uncle, like, bring them to me. You need me to mentor them? You need me to have a conversation with them? I'd be more than happy to teach them how to do something. Got a lot of action going on in there, Kai. Can you hear me?
Oh, sorry. I'm in the car. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. So what's your thoughts about that, man? Because somehow we need to save them before they, you know, because they already mortuary written.
Well, it's ironic you talk about that because I went through something similar earlier last month. And, I was like, go ahead, man. I'm like, dude, you just hit me, man. So, he jumps on the expressway, so I'm trying to get the tag number. I'm not even looking for the confrontation. So the mere fact that he ran already showed me something. So I got the tag number, and I'm just dealing with the nonsense now. You know what I mean? It's like I had to go to state trooper, had to wait for the state trooper, all this stuff, man. It's ridiculous. I just don't know right now, man. It's for me, you know, it's people like me, you, George, a couple other guys that, you know, have put time, effort, sweat, and sweat equity into our children, man. And, you know, we just come from their lineage, man. I guess we 60 babies. But these ones that's coming up now, man, I'm heartbroken. I'm really heartbroken,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, and I'm not all for these programs. I'm not rehabilitating these kids. That's not my issue right here, because the more we spend time rehabilitating them, the more they spend time taking over our community with these cranes, rebuilding our community at the table, negotiating deals while we cleaning up the neighborhood for them to be safe. They taking the neighborhood and rebuilding it. And black folks are so worried about the Democrat and Republicans opposed to the principle and the person, the policies and the procedures and stuff like that. What does it mean? Like, you giving up all understanding of reading and understanding certain resolutions and stuff like that. What's coming into your neighborhood? How did they get the contract to come into your neighborhood? What did they donate to a campaign fund in order to do what they do? Come on, man. You got the next 2 minutes, man. Go ahead and talk to me.
Well, remember the question I asked you, what's the safest place in America right now?
Mm-hmm. Help me
out. Library, because people don't read no more. It's a lost art. Walking in the library right now, I can guarantee you, there's no more than 3 or 4 people in there.
I thought that was because of technology, to be honest with you. I thought it was because of technology. But then it could be what you said as well. You know, they're getting so much information by way of their cell phone. You know, it's a resource for them. You know, I mean, you can Google that from where you are opposed to going somewhere. You know, I was never, when they wanted to, in East Falls, and they wanted to tear the library down and put condos there, we supported them so they wouldn't tear the library down. And then they were coming to move us out of our development, and none of the library staff would come and support us. They didn't come. They didn't come to the charrettes, the meetings, nothing. I was like, George, I was like, we stopped them from literally taking this library and moving it, telling you to go to Roxboro Library, and you won't even come to the table to support us. And they talking about relocating, you know, hundreds of families out of here.
Well, here's the thing, Prince. You know, I'm quite sure you've been in the courtroom. I'm quite sure you dealt with contracts, you and George. So my thing is, like, when you go in a courtroom, it's amazing, even like criminal law, you know, even like a criminal law case. Mm-hmm. It's ironic that these lawyers quote case law. So you have to dig them cases up. So you just can't pull them up on the internet and stuff like that there. So That's the part that gets me. It's like, you have to do some serious research on some stuff instead of just going on Google and everything else and thinking that you got the right answers for stuff. Well, and that's the part that kills me about
hold that thought. Hold that thought. Hold that thought. I'm going to put you on hold because you and George are going to talk. I got a special friend of mine. I'm going to take a one-minute break. I'm going to put you on hold. I'm going to take my friend, and the information he shares, I'm going to come back and I'm going to speak to you and George about this information. So why don't you just hold for a moment? Let me take a minute break. And thank you.
Every day, Mark fights retinitis pigmentosa, a blinding retinal disease. But even while his vision is taken, his family gives him hope. Because whether he's helping run their business or enjoying time at home with his wife and sons, Mark knows he's not fighting alone. For 50 years, the Foundation Fighting Blindness has funded research into treatments and cures for blinding diseases, providing real hope to those fighting vision loss. And our nationwide community of local chapters provides networking and support for people with vision loss, as well as their loved ones. Because the best way to fight against blinding diseases is to fight together. And for Mark, winning the fight against vision loss means being there for his family. The Foundation Fighting Blindness. Together, we're winning. Learn more about how you can help us end blinding diseases at fightingblindness.org.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away, and know when to run.
Okay, all right. We're back. We're back with Life's a Gamble. A friend of mine, Ed Reed, former NFL football player, he knows this VP pick better than I do. So I reached out to him so he can come on Life's a Gamble. I got two people on the line. So after you and I get through talking, Brother Reed, I want to hear their response to this right here. So welcome to Life's a Gamble, your host, Melvin Prince Jonathan.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Oh, man, I run a few businesses too, right? And I'm concerned about my income. And I read this article that said you went from $50,000 a month to $1,500 a month. I was like, well, wait a minute, let me talk to him. Oh, my God, that ain't funny. But how you managing? And tell us how that happened, if you don't mind.
Well, let me tell you something. You know, after my football career was over, I did a walk-on with the Minnesota Vikings in 2009. They brought in a few receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And just to, you know, one thing I've learned about that experience, life, you're always going to run into things that you feel that are failures.
Mm-hmm.
But it's never a failure. It's all about how you take and perceive things. You
correct.
Know? And so,
yep.
what happened was, I come from a breed where, you know, we're always going to keep trying as people.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And never going to take no for an answer. And that's the kind of attitude I've always carried, respectively.
Right.
But what happened was, after my football career ended, as you get older, no more teams are looking.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother, you know, it was a hard bite for me to chew because while I played arena football and I played in Canada, there was a certain income that I was used to, you know, and
exactly.
It was kind of a young thing. Being 23, 24, having things that you would never had, especially having a fun job playing football. So I always kept a nice car.
Right.
And so brother, he worked at a car dealership for over 30 years now. It's a mom and pop place called White Bear Lake Superstore here in Minneapolis, Minnesota. They
okay.
run a top, you know, class act there, you know, for General Motors. And so he said, Ed, we got a position here for you, man. He said, it might not be something you like, but he said, you know, come on in here, man, and come on work in the detail department. You always like to keep your car clean. So after working at a few detail shops prior to that, it was a union position. So they had, you know, more of a structured background for, you know, medical,
right.
things of that nature.
And some benefits, yeah, time and a half, stuff like that, yep.
Absolutely, for a parent of two at this point.
Mm.
So, you know, I got in there, worked 5 years, noticed how the department was really doing well. And as I'm growing, getting older, you know, I'm looking for more longevity. And so, you know, it came to a point where, you know, it's either I'm going to start my own business and run it the way, you know, because when you're doing things hands-on, people don't realize you're learning actually how to run a business if you take it seriously. You know what I mean? So, and that's even with McDonald's, Wendy's.
Well, Ed, let me tell you how I started my company. So I worked at UPS. I worked for 1 year unloading and sorting packages. And then I was promoted to supervisor because I did such a good job unloading. In fact, I broke the record. I held the record of unloading the 26-foot trailer in like 12 minutes, something like that.
Wow.
And so they had four sorters. They had to go in a sort aisle. And so when I looked at UPS, I looked at most successful companies had three-letter acronyms. It was UPS, ABC, CBS. And so when I created ELT, ELT store, it stands for an everlasting thought. Because when I was in public housing, I went up to a suburb part, upper part of Roxborough called Andorra. And the Jewish lady said, if you guys do well with your services, I'll tell all my other ladies on the block. And so we went from cutting grass to moving snow. And we did her services. She was 80 when we met her. She died at 92. So for 12 years, we did her services. And she was like, those kids from the projects, use them. And so ELT formed out of, if we do a bad job or we do a good job, it's going to be an everlasting thought, because she knew we was from public housing. So I get what you're saying. So I used to put, before I went to school, back to college, I put University of UPS, because they taught me policies. They taught me procedures. They taught me nobody works 8 hours a day. You know, you give them, pay them $15, $20, work them 5 hours, clean up the mess for 2 hours. And you don't need to work anybody 8 hours a day. But when you're union, it's a protocol to do 8 hours or 40 hours or something like that. So to your point, yeah, I understand.
Yep. And so when I left, yeah, that's great, man. You know, and that's what we need from brothers today, man, to hear each other's story and kind of touch base with things, because it really formulates into good ideas, you know, and that's what I'm about. And so, like, you know, I had this idea where I said, you know, let me, you know, try this out. I went out and spent my last $15,000 that I saved up and got this van fabricated to wash 72 vehicles on spot. And it also had electricity on board. So when I quit my job, I went over there because I asked for $50 an hour. That's something that they couldn't afford. I was pretty much running their department single-handedly. Basically, their used car inventory, it goes through a survey where if whoever's buying a used car, that basically, you know, you're going to get detail, you're going to get brakes, you're going to get rotors, you're going to get a new battery, you're going to get all these things to recertify the vehicle to resell.
Correct. Yep.
So we're on the hand of a used car that was being bought. So once I learned that and then took it, you know, took it on as a corporate company, I knew a lot of the dealers in the area who loved my work and loved my procedures. And it's very technical on what I do, because we have 10 different ways of making revenue with my business. And I advise any business owner, just like how, like I always speak about McDonald's, you know, they always have an upsell, something that's going to help you, you know, and help the customer to, you know, make sure that vehicle is looking great. And just so we, you know, I build a brand is what I did. And so we've been in business for 12 years. And we've been in the George Floyd Square area for 9 of those 12 years.
Wow.
And I pretty much, everything that happened on right there in front of me where George Floyd was killed by the Minneapolis Police Department. And so what happened is a lot of the black business owners and entrepreneurs in that area, we're definitely affected by 4 years of George Floyd's death. Since 2020.
Now, were you affected by the fact that they did what they did, or were you affected at the results of the aftermath? Because I know the aftermath, it seems like they just barricaded areas off and left them barricaded. So I don't know how any companies made money. So can you talk a little bit about that, if you can?
Well, like I said, you know, I could describe it to you this way, just kind of touch base on everything you just mentioned. You know, out of respect, when that happened to George Floyd, when he lost his life, all of our businesses lost our lives, because it turned into a rally where, you know, people couldn't come up the street, so much traffic, People were hearing things already and allegations. I mean, like, and then from the aftermath, there was a no-go zone placed in order came from the White House to Governor Walz, down to Mayor Jacob Frey, down to Arredondo.
Wait, you're talking about Tim? You're talking about Vice President Tim Walz?
Vice President runner-up.
Vice President pick, Governor yeah.
Walz.
Oh, wow. Yeah. So he helped. Go ahead. Carry on.
So while I was there, I was noticing everything that took place. That no-go zone basically said that cops can't come up there and patrol anymore after George Floyd's death because they were scared to handle another crime up there because people would be like, you know, hey, why are you guys in this area still? And this just happened to Floyd. So they knew it was a no-brainer not to have cops to come up there anymore. And so that led into a war zone where we had opportunists coming up there, Antifa coming up here, burning down the city, blaming it on the African-Americans, that we burned our own community stores down. It was a lot of stuff. You know, all the people they arrested were people from out of town, South Carolina, North Carolina. And, like, it's a preferably minority area where that happened with George Floyd, where they have Hispanics, Blacks, Somalis. So it was pretty proportioned.
So let me ask you a question here. Did you get any of the relief money that was given out? Because I'm sure if they had shut some white stores down or some Asian stores down, they had what's called relief money, whether you call it COVID money or whether you call it state of emergency funds. Did y'all get any of those funds in which to, if not relocate, to restart?
That's a good question. That's a very good question. What happened was, our city was burned down from Lake Street South down to Lake Street West. That means, like, all those minority businesses, if you look at it, it's broken down in minorities on who owned those areas and who owned those businesses. Mm-hmm. They all received $3 million, and they moved out of the area, and the city bought up their property.
Mm. So what did they do for you guys?
The city is now selling their property for new ideas.
Did they do anything for you guys, though? And so this is where politics, I'm excited about politics because I didn't know the vice president choice. And since I am a Republican, I still would like to ask him a question. And this is one of the questions I would ask is that have you properly funded the African-American businesses in the George Floyd Square? And it's a fair question. All you can say is yes, no, or we're looking into it, we're not looking into it. But hey, you boots on the ground. Did they didn't offer you guys $3 million, $2 million, any money at all?
Sir, where it happened at, there were 12 businesses there, all minority business owned, mainly Black as well. And they didn't give us a dime. They didn't offer us a dime. They're waiting for us to basically bleed out as businesses so they can finish buying up the area. I mean, like, they bought the SA on the corner of East 38th Street. They knocked down a Presbyterian home that people had moved into. There were people living in the streets. It turned into, I mean, like, how could you possibly allow this to happen to these businesses here that pay tax every year like everyone else? You allow, and then they got shrines in the streets. I mean, like, me preferably,
yeah.
I mean, I'm going to be honest.
Right.
That, I mean, like, they handled it the wrong way.
Right.
For one.
Right.
For two, they didn't tell Governor Walz and Mayor Jacob Frey, they didn't even tell anybody that there were basically killers in town robbing all the stores professionally, robbing all the bank vaults professionally. I mean, like, they ran through every bank and vault professionally and then came back the second night and burned the city down. So they knew that it was a military group that was out there and didn't inform anybody. I've seen these people at the rallies in front of George Floyd. Like, when they blocked the street off, my shop was in the back.
Right.
So all the traffic was coming down the alley.
Mm.
I had to, literally, for the last 3 years, I had to wear a bulletproof vest to go to work. I had to hire security to watch my back because people wanted to rob my store, burn it down. It was all about, you know, what the community or whoever that community was.
Yeah, that false perception.
Now, look, I'm
going to ask you a couple of questions, and I'm going to let you have the last minute. Two questions. One, because I'd seen this show in Atlanta when the Olympics came to Atlanta. And they had made all the African-Americans get vendor license and gave them posts and stuff like that. And then they diverted the traffic the other way, So they never got to where they had posted, had bought those licenses and vendor license for. So let me ask you a question. If the other candidate that's running for president of the United States, by some chance, a rub of a crystal ball, had the opportunity to come there and walk through that neighborhood, if Donald Trump said, hey, let me go take a look at it, and somebody could reach him and he said, hey, I want to walk through that neighborhood. I want to meet you, Mr. Reed. And you tell me exactly what's not happening here. And if I'm president of the United States, this is what I would do. Would you be inclined for that meeting if that meeting was to happen, if it could happen?
I would love that to happen because it would give me an opportunity to show you how. I mean, every major business in Minneapolis, Minnesota is failing because of what happened in that mm-hmm. riot. Mm-hmm. Everybody.
Well, you're talking to a businessman. So you're talking to a businessman who would ask you about a former president of the United States who's also a businessman who would probably be more than happy if he knew about it. And so from this radio station, we're going to see that he gets to know about it. I'm going to give you the last 30 seconds to say what you would like to say. I got two callers that are on the line that I wanted them to hear from you on the vice president pick, because I don't know him. You have interaction in your city with him. And so now we know we can educate ourselves when he comes back to Philadelphia to pose some questions to him to find out what he's done in his own neighborhood. So take the last 30 seconds, man, and tell us what you'd like us to know.
Well, first of all, they left us for dead. They left us to get killed with that no-go zone order. I mean, I've seen people get killed and shot in the head. I've seen 6 deaths already, personally, as a business owner, and it's disturbing. You know, when my kids are worried and my family is worried by me just typically going to work, doing what I do every day,
right,
that is definitely a problem. And not only that, they owe everybody and all the business owners in Minneapolis an apology for how they handled that with the officers. They still haven't taken ownership to even say that happened to George Floyd and they killed George Floyd because they haven't taken ownership of that. They still think he died of a drug. And they're still saying that. And I just think it's degrading how they gave his family $27 million when that's not even enough money when you've killed a man, someone in my family, and all across the world seeing how this man died. That is just a slap in the face to me personally.
Wow.
And then to ignore the business owners down on East 38th Street where it happened at. If we were, I just feel personally in my heart, it's not a white black thing what I'm saying here.
Right.
It's
talk.
I'm saying.
You know what?
You know, I love all people and all colors from all creeds. And my thing is, when we pay tax and we work hard and we have the American dream and we're working hard for what we want in life,
yeah,
take that from us by not taking ownership by killing a man that made our businesses a hostile environment.
Well, that's you got
exactly
a friend. You got a friend in Philadelphia. You got a friend on this airwave, WWDB, 860 AM, Life a Gamble. And we sure are going to roll the dice on this and make some things happen. Look, Brother Reed, I thank you for calling in, man. We're going to keep in touch with you. We're going to reach out to you and find out if we can do what we say we can do, which is ask the former president of the United States, the current candidate of the Republican Party, Donald Trump, if he can come there and meet with you and speak with you and take a walk. I'm going to take a break. Thank you once again. And I'll come right back after this minute.
Somewhere around 400 feet off the ground, an RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. When I first got out, I felt like my whole life had been smushed down to just medical appointments. I was going to occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. I'm not sure I would still be here if I didn't find the Friends and Wounded Warrior Project that I did. Because there was a long period after the injury where I really didn't understand why I was still here. I felt like I had lost everything. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight. The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
You got to know when to hold up, know when to fold up, know when to walk away.
Okay, we back. I should have George and I should have Clyde on. And you guys should both be on. Now, listen, I don't know the vice president pick. I don't even know Ms. Harris. So I'm not one to talk bad or ill or anything about those folks I don't know. But what I like to say is, if I had a chance to sit in a room and I needed it, somebody needed to roll their window up or something like that. If I had a chance to sit in a room and I had a chance to ask a question, I would want to ask a sensible question. So I would have to talk with people who know Governor Tim better than I do. And so I don't, when I talk to Democrats or people who vote Democrat, I always try to express that I'm not the totality of the Republican Party. I am a Republican with a bunch of Republican friends, part of an organization called the African American Republican Party, the new NAACP, RP. And so I want you guys' opinion on Tim. I did not know what happened to the black businesses when George Floyd, when they went through that issue with George Floyd. But I seek your guys' opinion on what you heard from the African-American former football player. I want to start with George, and then I want to get the opinion from Clyde afterwards. George, you only have about four minutes, but go ahead. Talk to me a little bit.
The thing is that with the whole thing of the George Floyd incident, it was something at that time and that moment, it just took the country over. Everything comes to a head, and, it just boils and spills over.
Right.
Now, how all that happened, why it happened, is always questionable. It's not about Democrat or Republican. It's just, bad timing. A situation happened where certain people in a part of the country got mad. That's when Black Lives Matter came alive. But then you ask yourself, what happened to Black Lives Matter?
Yeah, I heard you talk about that a lot. I heard you question their motive. And like you always say, where they at now? That's fair. The question is, where are they now?
Well, the thing is that where they're at now, the biggest Black Lives Matter is in, South Carolina and Lindsey Graham's district. They have a thing there. If you get stuck down there, they get you out, fly you out, bus you out, but you're not hanging around there. So, they do what the organization was starting. You know who runs it? All white women. I have yet to see any black one in there, and they call it Black Lives Matter. They get funding from everywhere. I mean, all white ladies that, I didn't even know people still use snuff. They got snuff, got a knot in their lip. Can I help you, sir? Yeah, I'm stuck here, and I don't have no way of getting home. Where you belong? I belong in Ecam, Mississippi. They say, is that a one station there? Do they have a bus there going there? Whatever they have going there, they're going to make sure that somebody take you to the train, plane, or bus station and get you. And let me say something else in Philadelphia that I think that is real horrible. This year in Philadelphia, we just like old country town. We don't even have a bus thing where people come in this city and there's a bus terminal or anything.
I thought we had one downtown. We don't have one anymore downtown?
No.
Peter Pan and... Graham?
No, that was outside. When it rained, you get wet. If you didn't have an umbrella, you had to stand up. There was no such thing as seating. I had guys go down there and actually build seats on Market Street. As a matter of fact, they might be still there, or the city took them down. But they would have anywhere from 50 to 100 and something people a day catching a bus in and out of this city. People come in on a bus, and they be talking about just the bus station? I mean, they moved them off Market Street. Now they have them down there on
whatever
Delaware
we can
Avenue.
Do from my side to help you. We want to help you.
Well, and you I'm got, going
hold,
to
you got, hold up. You got a home here on Mondays. I want to get Clyde in for the last minute and a half to hear his opinion.
Gotcha.
Thank you very much. Whatever we can do to help you build seating down there for those folks or shelter for those folks, because it's about to get cold soon. We'd be more than happy on the Republican side of this party right here. Thanks, George. Appreciate you, man.
Mm-hmm.
Clyde, come in. You there?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I got about a minute and a half, Clyde. So I'm not even going to say anything. I'm going to leave it up to you, man, from what you heard from my guy, Reed, in Minneapolis.
Thank you, Mr. Reed, for calling and giving us, the information he gave was insightful. However, the beginning of it, what he talked about was basically after, you know, going to these different, you know, going to the car dealership and everything. And it's, you know, it's an old saying, lose your job and find your work.
Right.
It seems to me that he found, it seems to me that he's found his work, you know. So, you know, the situation up in, you know, up in Minnesota, is, I mean, you getting it firsthand from somebody that lives there.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing is like, well, you
let
know.
Let me tell you this right here. We're going to try to go right to the source. I'm going to see if I can help him out a little bit. I'm up against the clock right now. I thank you for calling. You know, you got a home here on WWDB, 8:60 a.m. Life's a gamble from 2 to 3. Thank you, Clyde. I appreciate you, man.
No,